to the City View Church Podcast. We hope you enjoy today's message.
We never thought we could feel like such failures as parents.
Hi, I'm Scott DeRuiter. I'm a worship pastor here at City View Church. This is my wife, Katie, and we have been serving here for over 3 years.
We've been married for 16 years now. We were high school sweethearts, got married during college. Kids came along soon after, a few years into married life. When our oldest child was born, we were very active in a college group at our church in Tucson. College group involves late nights, long hours, full houses of people. We loved it. It was a real joy to us. And Priya came along and we thought, well, she's just here for the ride and here we go. Having a really sensitive, colicky baby though, late nights and big crowds were out of the question, like from day one. So everything in ministry and in our lifestyle had to suddenly change the day she came along. We loved her and we were trying so hard to be really good parents, but we just felt completely in over our heads from the very, very beginning. As our family grew, it became really clear to us that our kids were very unique, that their needs were very unique and different. We found out pretty early on that Liam had some special needs. He was extremely gifted, but he was a very different learner. It was a struggle from a really early age to learn how to parent him and parent completely different than we had already learned to start with. When Priya was 5 and Liam was 3, God laid it on our heart to become foster parents. We still didn't feel like we had parenting figured out in the slightest. So it was a real step of faith to say, okay, God, we're just going to believe you and take you at your word that this is the right step for our family and open up our home. It was a struggle just to find our footing and figure out what each day was going to look like and how to make it through.
You know, as parents, we feel it's our responsibility to give our kids every opportunity to succeed and help them, direct them in those areas. And to make choices for the right environment for them, whether it's for school or whatever. And but then, you know, second guessing yourself on those choices or before you make those choices, you know, is this going to be something good for them, or is it going to set them up for failure again? And so finding that was a real big struggle, a real big weight on our minds, and whether or not we were making the best choices for them. And if we had done so up to that point, you know, like I mentioned before, that comparison thing is a big deal, especially when it comes to things like, you know, social media coming around and seeing the perfect posts, you know, the perfect pictures that people put up and realize, you know, here are our kids throwing fits in the middle of Walmart every time we go in. You know, running away at church as soon as we get there, different things like that. And so you feel like, well, I don't have any perfect posts, perfect pictures to put on. And so you realize, is that just real life, or is there something that we're not doing?
We felt like it was something we couldn't share with a lot of our friends too, as we watched their kids grow and succeed and we saw ours falling further behind and struggling. I remember one night in particular that was a big turning point for me. I was just laying in bed and crying and thinking about the day and all of, you know, recounting all the string of what I felt like were just failures to God. And I remember just praying, God, I'm so sorry that I have failed with these kids that you gave me. I felt such a responsibility that God had given me these special children. And I'd been told over and over by really sweet people that, well, you know, God gave you such special kids because he knew you were such a special parent for them. And it was meant from such a kind place from these people. But then that just made me further feel like, oh, no, what have I done? You know, God gave me these children and I've dropped the ball. I've messed it up. And as I laid there just praying and telling God all the ways that I felt like I had failed that day and failed my children, I remember the verse coming to mind and God just telling me, my grace is sufficient for you. my power is perfected in your weakness. And in that moment, I just felt so much of God's grace towards me that I knew in every other area of my life that it wasn't my works that were going to achieve anything. You know, it was God's goodness. It was God's grace. It was His strength and power that were going to achieve anything. But I think for some reason, through all of those years, I had just struggled thinking that this area had to be me. It had to be my effort and had to be my success that I could present this to God and say, you know, look at what a good job I did parenting these kids you gave me. And it was in that moment that I realized that these were God's kids and that He loved them more than I ever could, that He knew them, that He made them and all of their special and unique needs, and that those needs were even created somehow for His glory along their life. It was just a moment that was so freeing to think that, okay, God, I'm really only supposed to be doing this in Your strength, and all of the results and the outcomes are in Your hands, God. And knowing that my kids' futures and their story wasn't dependent on me, that I was called to be faithful and to parent them as best, you know, God had equipped me to do, but that really God was going to be the one who transformed their lives, that they were going to have an encounter for themselves with Jesus that was going to change them, you know, in the same way God had met and changed my life at one point. I remember just feeling like such a weight was rolling away, that all of this guilt that I had built up, all of this this fear of the future and of what was going to happen to my kids. And because really, when you're entrusting your kids to God and you know that the future belongs to Him, there's not that struggle and that worry of what if I mess it up and what if I do this all wrong.
When we, even with all of that fear and with all of that guilt of perceived bad parenting, you know, even in the midst of that, God reminded us of His faithfulness and that we're not alone. When Jesus is given a name in the Bible, you know, one of the names He's given is Emmanuel, which was God with us. And that really impacted us, the sense that God is always faithful to be with us and to walk with us, to give us wisdom when we lack it, and to continually show His faithfulness and His love toward us.
I think since that shift in perspective and of that time that God really spoke to my heart so clearly, I feel so much less guilt about my own performance and actions as a parent. I feel like now I'm able to look to God every day for the strength that I need, and life is still really hard. There are still some days that do end in tears and end just feeling overwhelmed with life, but I don't feel like I come to God anymore with a list of things that I am so ashamed of as parents.
And it was a big thing with us is, as we mentioned before, there was a lot of isolation with it. We felt like we couldn't share these struggles with a lot of people. But, you know, God has brought us into a community of people to share life together. And now that, like you said, we've surrounded ourselves with other couples or families that have kids or who have had kids and have gone through it, it really has opened us up to be able to not only share maybe what our struggles might be and receive prayer or help or support, but on the other end of it, we're able to give support to those who are going through it at the moment.
We never thought that we could feel like such failures as parents, but God has been so good to meet us even in our hardest times, even on the toughest days, and show us that He cares more about our kids than we ever could, and that His grace is enough to carry us through even those hard times. There's still struggles. Parenting is never going to be easy with any kid, but God is right there in the middle of it, and His grace is enough.
Lord, You are so good to meet us right where we are. Lord, You don't look down on us as failures, but Lord, You're so quick to forgive. Lord, I thank You that You love us, that You care for us, that You have a plan for each and every one of us. And Lord, I ask, God, that You would bless us today. Lord, bless us here at City View. Lord, bless the people that are at churches all over the valley. Lord, whether they're at Cross Church or Gateway or Redemption or Calvary Community, Lord, wherever your people are, God, ask that you'd meet your people. Lord, bless us this morning in Jesus' name. And all God's people said, amen. Hey, good morning and good morning. Thank you, Scott and Katie, for sharing your story. Man, who can't relate to feeling like a failure? I mean, if you have kids, you're like, yeah. If you are just if you're a person without kids, yeah. It doesn't matter where you are in life, what stage you are in life, what age you are in life, we can all feel like failures. And it's not just a matter of what day of the week, it's more of what time of day do I feel like a failure? Because that's just sort of how it is. You can feel like a failure as you're driving to work. You can feel like a failure when you're in a meeting at work. You can feel like a failure when you send an email and then you see that you misspelled something. That's me every day, all day. The other day, my wife goes, honey, I was going to tell you, your email sounded really good. And I go, well, it's because Jared typed the whole thing for me, and I just sent it from my email. But we can feel like failures. I can feel like a failure as a husband, as a dad, as a pastor, as a friend. I beat myself up. I can feel like quitting. I can feel ashamed. Failure will hold you hostage when Jesus wants to set you free. You see, Jesus is quick to forgive us of our failure, not condemn us in it. That's the one point I want us to remember today. Jesus is quick to forgive us of our failure, not condemn us in it. He's so quick. You know, and as I thought about this, about failure, and I was like, man, I don't know a bigger failure in the Bible than Peter. He had Jesus in front of him every day for 3 years, and somehow he failed more times than anybody would know. He was one of the most outspoken of all of the guys in the Bible. When Jesus asked everyone, who do people say that I am? Peter said, you're Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. And Jesus turns to Peter, and he says, Peter, good job. You got the answer right. And you know that had to have made him feel good. You know he had to have been like, yeah. Looked at all the other 11 disciples like, you hear that? I got the answer right. Who doesn't do that when you get the answer right? You get prideful. You're happy. You look at everybody in the crowd, and it's a meeting, and your boss says, hey, who's got this? And you say the right answer, and everybody looks at you, and you're like, yep, bonus time. Peter was the only one to walk on water. Peter was the only one that he went and said, hey, Jesus, my mother-in-law. I mean, think of that. I mean, so many people have problems with their mother-in-laws. I don't, but people do. Peter actually went and said, hey, Jesus, will you heal my mother-in-law? She's sick. Peter was the only one when Jesus took his disciples up on the top of the mountain and they saw Jesus in his glory. He was the only one to speak and say, hey, God, how about we build everybody a temple? Even though he got in trouble for those words, he at least spoke up. He spoke up as a good thing. Peter was the only one who tried to defend Jesus. He cut off a guy's ear. But also at the same time, Peter was one of the biggest failures. He stuck his foot in his mouth more times than anybody could think. He's the only one to walk on water and sink in the middle of it. He was the only one to cut off a guy's ear while defending Jesus and get reprimanded multiple times by Jesus. He was the only one that lied about being a follower of Jesus. We can look at all of our failures in life and think, what's the point? But when Jesus looked at us, he doesn't see a failure, he sees his child. You have to remember that. When Jesus looks at you, he doesn't see a failure, he sees his child. You see, Jesus is quick to forgive us of our failure, not condemn us in it. It's so important to remember that. And so imagine Peter now, and we're going to turn to John chapter 21. John chapter 21, it's going to be right up here on the screen. You can go to your Bibles. You can go to the YouVersion Bible app. Hit the three little lines on the far right. Find events. City View is right there. And you're going to see every single verse I'm going over today. So we meet Peter. The last real time Peter spent with Jesus before he died, he was in the courtyard warming himself by a fire. And at three different times, people said, aren't you a follower of Jesus? And Peter said, no. Can you imagine those words, what they were ringing in his head every moment? The realization that he had denied Jesus. That the last time he saw Jesus, he denied him before he died. And that had to have sunk so deep in his soul. That had to have been something he remembered every night. Have you ever failed so bad that it haunts you every single day? It will not leave you alone. It speaks to you in your dreams. It speaks to you in billboards as you're driving down the freeway. In the people that you come across in life, you see failure. You see your kids, maybe they're grown, maybe they're little, and you look going, are they acting like this because I failed them as a parent? And I wonder how many times in Peter's life he thought, I am a terrible person. And then Jesus dies. And he doesn't get a chance to say, Jesus, I am so sorry. No, I am a follower of Jesus. No, I follow Jesus with everything that I have. He does not get that opportunity. Instead, he sits in that sorrowful place of knowing that he let his Savior down. And so we come to chapter 21, and I'm going to tell the story you're more than welcome to read. So Jesus, or his disciples, Jesus has passed away. Jesus is dead. He's risen again, but he's not hanging out with them as much. So the disciples, 11 of them, because Judas killed himself. So the 11 buddies, they're out there, and they're getting ready to go. They want to do something like, okay, what are we supposed to do with our life now? What are we supposed to do now? And Peter says, well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to go fishing. Because it was the one thing he felt he was good at. It was the one thing he felt, well, if I can do anything, I can fish. I was successful at fishing before I had Jesus, so I'm going to do it again. I'm going to go back to that. How many of us, when you fail, you go back to something you feel like is comfortable? And that comfortable thing doesn't have to be a good thing. It could be a terrible thing. But how many times when we fail, we go right back to something we're comfortable with? It could be drinking. It could be pornography. It could be just hiding in a room all by yourself and just feeling like, you know, I'm good at hiding and I'm good at being a recluse. I'm good at not talking to people. We can go back to the very thing that was never good to us. And Peter goes, you know, I'm going to go back fishing. And all of his friends go, me too. And so they toss their nets into the water. There in verses 1-3. And guess what happens? All night long they fish and they catch nothing. So not only does Peter have this feeling of failure from denying Jesus, because you know that haunts him. You know that's in his mind. You know he's thinking about that. But now he's failed as a fisherman. The one thing that defined him, the one thing he knew, the one thing that brought him comfort, and he's failing. You know, there are those things that we do. I don't know what you do. But maybe where you go and you're able to just sit and think. Do you have those things? Maybe it's doing dishes where you just ponder. I don't know how many of you guys, I actually, when I can stand and able, I don't mind doing dishes because it's just sort of a quiet thing to do. Maybe it's golf. Maybe you're a fisherman. Maybe you like to go and sit on the lake, catch nothing, but you're sitting there with your line in the water going, this is my peace. And so I wonder if Peter, while he was sitting there in the boat fishing with his net, I wonder if his mind went back to times and he thought about all the guilt he felt. I wonder if the deep pain set in of letting Jesus down. I wonder if he thought back to the first time he met Jesus. Because do you do that? Where you think back? You think, where did I go wrong? How did I get off? And you just sort of think back, and I wonder if Peter was doing that in the boat. He probably was thinking, I never thought this is how my life would end. Do you think that? You think he was sitting in the boat fishing, and he's probably like, I always thought I was going to be a successful follower of Jesus, and look at me now, I'm back to fishing. I failed. I was doing some great things, and then I let Jesus down. And then he's sitting there, you know, fishing, and then out of the silence, some guy on the shore yells, and you always have those critics. You always have those people in your life. You go, hey, how you doing? The guy yells, hey, did you catch anything? Don't you, for any of you who fish, don't you hate that when you have not caught a thing? You're sitting there, you're in your boat, or you're fishing from some dock, and the guy walks up, and you've got a bucket, and it's empty, and he says, have you caught anything? If you ever go to California, you're on the pier, and you see those people, and they got fish in their bucket, it's usually the fish they're using to catch with. It's not the ones they caught. And you're like, hey, did you catch anything? And they look at you like, I hate you. And so Peter is there feeling like a failure, not only feeling like a failure as a man, but feeling like a failure as a follower of Jesus. And this guy from the shore, which none of them know who he is, yells, "Have you caught anything?" Don't you hate it? Your face turns red and you just want to yell back, "I hate you." And then what does the guy do? Like everybody does. Your kids are throwing a fit in Walmart. Your kids are sick. Anything is happening if you have kids. And they're like, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing this?" Your kids have a cough. And they're like, "Hey, have you ever thought about rubbing gasoline and some kind of oil with this mixture of this?" And then, or the 2 cents, "Hey, you know what? Maybe you should take your kids to this." Or, "Have you ever thought about spanking your kids?" Or, "Have you ever thought about doing..." And then they come up with this list of all these things that you should do. And in the middle of the moment, you just feel like a failure. In the middle of the moment, you don't want to hear anybody's ideas. And that's in anything in life. You get pulled over and the police officer goes, "Do you know why I pulled you over? Was I speeding? Well, were you? I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I did wrong." You know, and you just don't want. And then so the guy on the shore not only yells, "Did you catch anything?" You yell back, "No." And then he goes, "Hey, try this." You always have those people that are ready to throw in their 2 cents. So the disciples, they have nothing better to do. They've caught nothing. So like, all right. They throw it overboard. And all of a sudden, they get such a huge haul, they can't even pull it in the boat. And I wonder if in that moment, as Peter's thinking back to all the times he spent with Jesus, I wonder if in that moment he thought, "Hey, this has happened to me before. I remember the first time I really spoke with Jesus. He was in my boat," in Luke chapter 5, verses 4 through 11. It says, "When Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, 'Now go out where it is deep and let down your net and catch some fish.' And Peter's response was, 'We worked hard all night and didn't catch a thing.'" How many times have you had somebody, you failing, you're not doing it right, and somebody says, "Have you tried it this way?" And you're like, "Yes, I have. I've cast my nets in that water time and time again. There's no fish in the sea." And it's not even a sea. It's a lake. It's too small. And you just like, "I don't want to care." And then all of a sudden you say, "But you know what? Sure, I'll try it. Whatever. If it'll make you happy, if you'll leave me alone, I'll try it." How many times have we ever been to that in that situation when we feel like failures? Sure. And all of a sudden, the nets are so full, they start to break. And Peter looks. This is Peter doing that, you know, you doing that, what's it called when you think back, the flashback. Peter's having this flashback. He's sitting there as he's pulling in the nets this new time. He's remembering what happened the first time. And he says, "Wait a minute." And I wonder if as Peter was pulling in the nets the first time, he's pulling them in. And it says when Simon Peter realized, verse 8, when he realized what had happened, he fell on his knees before Jesus. And he says, "Oh, Lord, please leave me. Go away. I'm not worthy for you to be in my presence right now. I can't have you here. I'm a dirty person. I know I'm a sinner. I cannot have you here." He was awestruck by the number of fish. But what does Jesus say? Jesus say, "Yeah, you are a failure." Jesus says, "Peter, don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." Period. He says, "This is who you will be for the rest of your life. Not for the next 3 years. Not for a moment of time." He says, "Peter, you are not a failure. Peter, you will fish for people." And I wonder if in that moment, as he is remembering the failure he did as a disciple of Jesus Christ, remembering he denied Jesus, and he's listening to some guy yelling in from shore, "Hey, try it this way." And all of a sudden, the nets begin to break. The disciples bring it up, and they can't get in the boat. And then his buddy John, who somehow always has the right answer, says, "Peter, I think it's Jesus." You see, Jesus is always quick to forgive. He's always quick to forgive us of our failure, not condemn us in it. And so what does Peter do? Peter jumps into the water. He jumps in the water and he swims. And what does it say the rest of the disciples do in John chapter 21? It says they row the boat. Somebody still has to bring the fish back to shore. He swims. He's like, I'm ditching you guys. That's Jesus. And so can you imagine that moment? The moment Peter gets up on shore and he's like, hey, Jesus. Because he still hasn't apologized. The guilt is still there. The shame is still there. But Jesus is right there, ready to forgive, yet failure haunts him every single moment. Jesus had breakfast for them. Because it's guys. It's what guys do in the morning. You eat breakfast. And then it says Peter, or Jesus then looks over at Peter. Can you imagine that moment? Peter so embarrassed. Remembering, I cut off a guy's ear. I fell asleep praying. I denied Jesus. He's never going to use me again. I failed. And then it says after breakfast, Jesus said, Simon Peter, can you imagine those words? When Jesus says your name, he says, Simon Peter, do you love me? He doesn't say, hey, Simon Peter, do you feel bad for what you did, you little jerk? He doesn't say, hey, Simon Peter, remember you failed. Hey, do you feel like a failure? I want to make sure, because I can't tell you how many times I have done that to my kids where I've made them feel bad. I feel like a complete, I can think of plenty of bad words to say how I felt, but I felt like a jerk. But there's so many more words that would define it so much better, but a jerk is what I'll use. But what does Jesus do? He says, do you love me? Peter says, yeah. He says, feed my sheep. Then again, Jesus looks at him. He says, Simon Peter, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. He says, then take care of my little ones. Then the third time. And can you imagine how the guilt is washing away? Because Peter denied Jesus three times, and each time Jesus is giving him that opportunity to feel washed and clean and forgiven. Three times Jesus said, do you love me? Three times Peter says, yes, you know I do. And the three times he failed are washed away because Jesus, we have to remember, Jesus is quick to forgive us of our failure, not condemn us in it. The third time Jesus says, Simon Peter, do you love me? Peter was hurt. Because how many times have we ever felt like you, I don't deserve to even love you anymore? He says, Lord, you know everything. You know I love you. Jesus, then feed my sheep. At the end of verse 19, Jesus says, Peter, follow me. I am not done with you yet. Would you guys please welcome up Scott and Katie?
Oh, goodness.
Do you guys have the microphone? I don't know where it is. There it is. Oh, man. Scott and Katie, thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you for being vulnerable, because I think you say what all of us feel all the time. Like, I stink as a parent. I know I did yesterday and this morning. I did this morning, man. But hey, I have some questions for you guys, and you guys can answer however wants to answer. But how do you help support each other as parents? Like, what do you guys do?
Well, we have to make sure that we realize that we're on the same team. I think in the moments when we're frustrated with parenting or whatever's going on in the house, that it's easy to be frustrated with each other. So sometimes it's just a reaction. But that we're on the same team. And so I know there's been instances on both sides when one of us is home and doing the stuff around the house and doing stuff with the kids, and the other one comes home, whether it be from work or whatever, and the one at home is just frazzled, and so where, you know, maybe Katie's with the kids and she's frazzled, and I've come home and you know, I'm looking forward to just sitting down. Maybe I've had a long day or whatever, but I just need you to take the kids, or I need you to, and you the person with the kids at home is overwhelmed, but you're the one coming home is okay. I'll do whatever I can to take whatever off your plate, you know, so there's less stress that builds up. And so that's an example, and it's happened to both of us. We both had to help each other out in that area. But I would say being on the same team and supporting each other that way.
I think I've had to realize, too, that we are both going to parent very differently. We're going to have different reactions. We're going to interact with our kids in different ways. But that instead of trying to make each other do things our way, like, no, you should have handled it this way, that realizing that that's a benefit, that God created both of us as unique people to parent these children for unique times. So realizing that, no, he's not going to react the same way I would, and he's not going to have the same interactions with our kids, and that's a blessing. That's good. That balances out our parenting. And you're right, not letting the stress that we're having in our home come into our marriage, realizing that, you know, some of the times we just laugh. Like, it gets so bad that you want to cry, you want to scream, you want to do whatever, and instead we just have to realize the ridiculousness of some of the situations and just laugh with each other.
That's so true. So what are some things that you guys do to help your kids through their failures?
Still figuring that out.
I think one of the big things we had to do was realize that we needed help, that we aren't perfect or equipped in everything we need for our kids. So getting a team around us that's going to help meet our children's needs has been huge. You know, we have therapists, psychologists, special ed coordinators. We have all kinds of people that we've had to pull into our family circle just to help us be the best parents we can possibly be. And realizing that that wasn't a weakness in us, but that asking for help and finding the right person to help our children is going to benefit them and benefit our family in the long run. And I think another big thing was realizing I can get very lost in the day-to-day moments and get so overwhelmed by them that I forget the really big picture going on for our kids. You know, you're so focused on this one thing, like you're potty training your kid and you're like assuming that they're never going to get it. My kid's going to be 12 and won't know how to go to the bathroom and I failed. And yeah, which, you know, isn't real. But you can get so overwhelmed in whatever moment or phase your kid is going through. Or, you know, they're struggling with this, and you want to take it to the extreme of, oh, they're never going to be a functional adult because I, you know, can't teach them how to, you know, not do this or do this or anything. So when I take the focus off of whatever their struggle is at that moment and put it back on God and his power to overcome whatever their struggle is, it changes the entire mood. It changes the whole attitude of my heart. Like, especially that last song that we sang has been our, like, parenting cry for one of our kids in particular who's struggling really badly right now. Because there's a line in it that says, this is my confidence, you've never failed me yet. And in times when it is so dark and I have no idea how things are going to work out, instead of, like, jumping to these extremes and being like, oh my gosh, what's our life going to look like for the rest of our lives? Instead, I just have to go back to God and go, what? I've walked with you for 20 years and you've never failed me. It's not going to start today. It's not going to start in this situation. There's something good coming.
I would just probably add, far as practically, you know, we have four kids. All four of them are special needs on some degree or another, but it's not uniform. Our parenting, where they go to school, what, all sorts of things are not uniform for them. We have to figure out their unique needs and play to that, really. So when it's coming over their failures, you know, or making them, helping them succeed, it's what is going to best support and help them. And it takes a lot of effort, and it's really amazing, like Katie said, to have that team around you, people that can give you help and advice, and whether it is people like who are therapists or psychologists or people who are just been through it before, you know, people who've, they've parented, their kids are grown, and they've have, you know, advice for you. So that's, yeah, I'm trying to use all the tools that you, yeah.
The last question, what would you guys say to a parent who feels like a failure?
I would say a couple things. I think we touched on it in the video. One is, you're not alone. I know for myself, in a lot of areas of life, if it's a failure or whatever, I always feel like I'm the only one. And that there's no possible way that people around me or my friends or my family are going through it. But it's not true. And that is a straight up, we would say that was as a straight up lie from the enemy, from the devil. So you're not alone. Just about anybody who's, tons of people have gone through it. So to help with that, we have found that being in community is a big part. And here at CV, we have city groups. You hear us talk about it all the time. We didn't start off in city groups. We didn't go to the first two or three sessions of them. But after we did, and I didn't really want to go. It's just one more thing. Our kids don't do great in the evening, and they're usually in the evening. I really didn't want to go. That was more of a personal thing. I'm an introvert, whatever. But we went, and we're like, oh, we love this. And then, well, let's host one, you know. And so being in that community, like I said in the video, when you can surround yourself with people who are going through it, have gone through it, who can give you support in prayer, but also desired advice, not people who are yelling, you should do this. But, you know, you can see the experience behind it. You know, they can help you out. They can support you. That's a huge thing. Like we use the line all the time. We're not meant to live alone. We're meant to live in community. That's not just a tagline we use for city groups. It really is a truth. And so that, and then I forgot what my second point was. But
I think just realizing, yeah, that one, that you are not alone, and two, like you were bringing up, that God isn't judging you in whatever failure you're having for that day. I felt a whole lot of shame because I've always been in ministry, and I would come and put on a really great face on Sunday morning. I would somehow manage to get the kids out the door looking halfway decent, all tucked into children's ministry, and then be like, oh, bless you, praise God. In the back of my head, I'm remembering that, you know, I was yelling to get them out the door. We were all crying on the drive to church. I remember when Priya was little, we were driving to church one morning, and she goes, Mama, why do we all cry every Sunday morning? And I'm driving the minivan going, I don't know, baby. Sundays are stressful. It's hard to get the kids out the door. So realizing that, yeah, like Scott said, shame is another one of the devil's greatest tools to make you want to live isolated and maybe not to fulfill your calling, thinking, oh my gosh, I couldn't serve in that capacity. Look at what a terrible person I am. What a hypocrite I would be. But realizing that you're going to fail, you have to apologize to your kids, come and bring it to God and say, God, help me this next time. And yeah, just don't let that stop you.
Thank you guys so much for sharing. You guys, remember, Jesus is quick to forgive us of our failure, not condemn us in it. That's a truth. We remember that. And if you have a story, please email us your story. Here is the email address right here. If you have a story, you're like, oh man, I'd love to share about anything. And you're like, well, I'm not, you know, you look at some of these stories and you're like, I've never had that. Any kind of story. We want to help you share your story about how Jesus has done something big in your life. And then don't forget to update your info. And here's a teaser for next week.
I never thought that my life choices would lead to my son dying at 17.
Thank you for joining us today. For up-to-date series information, find us on social media at CityViewPHX or go to CityViewPHX.com.